Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
We wanted to try and get an understanding as well about the South African national disasters, pandemics, and how the pandemics exposed the vulnerability of our government. Joining us this morning, Sandile Swane. He's a political analyst. Thank you for doing so once again. How are you this morning?
Jolly good, Howard. I hope you're all right and your listeners. Thank you.
Yeah, all good, this end. Thank you. So there's no doubt when we look at the COVID pandemic, we look at what's happened in KwaZulu-Natal, that the weaknesses, almost the COVID, the pre-existing conditions of government have been exposed even more than they would have under normal circumstances. Take us through your thoughts around this.
Yes, I think people have been sensing that our government in the area of disaster management and general health and safety of the population is not up to scratch. There's a student in the University of Free State who published their doctoral dissertation in 2020, where they assessed the extent to which the disaster management centers provincially and nationally have actually readied themselves as prescribed in the Disaster Management Act of 2002. That the findings of that study were that, number one, the government of South Africa at provincial level, the disaster management centers do not have information systems, the correct disaster management information systems. They do not have the correct personnel, people who are qualified in risk management and disaster management. They do not have communication systems around disasters. So which means that since the Disaster Management Act was promulgated in 2002, by 2020, and I think till today, 2022, the structures of government have not been resourced with the correct equipment, the correct human resources, to be able to prevent disasters and to be able, when disasters do actually occur, to minimize the loss of life and property. That is why the University of Northwest has published a statement to the effect that what has happened in KZN, as an example, is not a natural disaster, but a man-made disaster. It is made by humans who have not heeded advice, scientific advice of what to do to prevent these disasters and to prevent loss of life. So that is basically where we are. On the side of biosecurity, which is what the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic deals with, it showed us clearly that we don't have early warning systems in the biometric, in the biosecurity field. That is why the State of the Nation address and the budget speech in 2020 never mentioned the threat of COVID-19. Overnight, almost in March, there was COVID-19. But COVID-19 had already started in China the year before. But our intelligence services, our early warning systems were fast asleep.
So that's interesting. So because to some extent, we did reasonably well. We've got our scientists, SAHPRA, the NICD, coped very, very well. They moved into action fairly quickly. But what you're saying is, from a government perspective, there weren't the early warning systems, there weren't the systems in place to be able to predict and manage this ahead of time. In other words, we were on the back foot when all of this occurred. Is that a accurate summation of what you're saying?
It's an accurate summation. There are a number of issues we have to consider there as well. Let me make another example, which may seem to be unrelated. Bear in mind that, for instance, in 1998, we were warned that by 2007, we'd run out of electricity in South Africa. That's an early warning system. Engineers in the SADC region met in 1996 and determined by when we're going to run out of electricity. But we actually ran out of electricity. We're still running out of electricity. Yes. So it is one thing to get the early warning signal sometimes, and quite another to act on the basis of the professional and scientific and technical advice that you get. So even with this COVID-19, there is evidence, and Professor Shabbir Madi of Wits University will tell you that actually a lot of the actions that were taken were not following scientific advice. Politicians were still taking political decisions rather than technical and scientific decisions. So they would consult with the scientists and appear on TV with scientists, but actually not follow the advice. Similarly, in our economic system, there's a lot of brilliant economists who've been appointed to advise the presidents and advise this one and advise this one, but there is no evidence that the advice is being used. So you need to be very careful to distinguish between advice that is being made available and the actual implementation of that advice. In the case of disaster management, we know for sure, with hard evidence, that advice, scientific and technical advice, is not being used by politicians in South Africa today.
So how difficult is this to fix? Because it is more about a change of mindset, isn't it? It requires a shift to be able to say, we need to be prepared, we need to understand what's coming or what the risks are, and we need to do something to protect ourselves about it. How far are we from shifting?
Yes, I think we're far from shifting, and there's a number of things that can be done pretty quickly. You must remember that a lot of good work was done by the non-governmental sector, community organizations, and so on in South Africa before 1994. Communities, chiefs, and so on used to manage their own environment. So we need to go back to a place where those NGOs, those universities and so on, teach people how to protect themselves from disaster. Planting trees, making sure they are, you create channels for water to flow in the correct, the students at junior secondary schools and high schools do community projects that protect the environment, that even the youth in the USA, the youth corps in the USA are doing that work. But in South Africa, there are no youth corps that are going out there and protecting the environment, stabilizing the environment, and dealing with issues of health and safety in the communities. That can be mobilized quickly if the mindset of community leaders leads the politicians in that direction. Our politicians need to be led. They're out of it now. They're out of the depth that they need. They need to be led now. We need to lead our politicians.
And to a large extent, what you're saying is decentralize it. Make sure that we take control away from government. Don't give them all of the control that they have taken until now, because that's really what's happened. We've become reliant on government to solve these problems versus ourselves, where we can address some of these issues quite literally on the ground.
Absolutely. I mean, when I was a youngster back in the 70s in Soweto, we were the ones going out there teaching people food security, food gardens. We were the ones walking door to door, collecting money to build creches, because the government was not building any preschools. So the community work, we learned community work even before we got to high school, some of us. But the youth today, they are loitering around, pressing on the cell phones, and nobody's mobilizing that energy of the communities, the churches, the religious structures, the sports organizations, to actually develop the environment in which people live in. So we need to take that power as communities and community leaders and have the self-confidence that we can alter the situation ourselves.
Absolutely right. Before I let you go, and we unfortunately are out of time, one of our listeners asking why we can't find alternative electricity generation until Eskom is fixed. For example, the car power ships, which are effectively mobile generators. Is that, in your view, are these things we should be looking at the moment?
I think that there is a lot of, obviously, when you are in a crisis, you've got to look at alternatives, but you've got to look at alternatives wisely and not deep in the crisis. I am still tempted to believe that the solution that was suggested by Solidarity, the Africans Union, needs to be considered. For example, we have two power stations, Medupi and Kusile, that can be brought very quickly into operation with the right personnel, with the right attitude. If we're to recruit our old engineers that are now have been sidelined by Eskom and bring them back into stream and cause them to make the power stations to work, load shedding could be maybe resolved within 24 months and so on and so forth. And also our industries need to be given the opportunity to develop their own solar power and other alternative generation capabilities, because more than 52% of the power, by the way, goes to industry. And they are capable of generating their own power, et cetera, et cetera. So those, to me, would be sustainable solutions. Estates, these big estates that are being developed, can also be given a chance to develop their own electricity, et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely, and that's where we leave it. Sandile Swana, thank you, as always, political analyst, giving us his perspective and some very, very thought-provoking ideas.